for members only. Golf Smarter number 224 for March 30, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Part 2 with PGA Tour veteran Andrew McGee.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Golf Ahoy at golfahoywest.com. Want to go to the 2010 Ryder Cup this September in Wales? Stay tuned for details on an awesome travel package to witness golf's most intense international competition. Well, I'm leaving tomorrow night for my annual golf outing with my three closest friends, and like last year, we're taking advantage of a free condo in Las Vegas and playing four rounds over Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, followed Saturday afternoon by the final four. Is this a boy trip or what? We're actually going up to Mesquite on Thursday, which is about an hour and a half outside of Vegas, but supposedly a great golf destination. As long as there's no monkey business with the airlines again, this should be a great weekend. I'll have my video camera, so at the very least, I'll be able to introduce you to a couple of new golf courses that you may want to check out. So let's get back to our conversation with Andrew McGee, whom you met last week. I still have lots of questions about life on the tour, off the course, his record as a pro, and his greatest achievements on the tour. Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Andrew.
Well, thank you for having me, Fred.
Well, thank you very much for coming back. So, Andrew, this is what I want to do. I want to pick up where we were last week when you were talking about your decision to finish your competitive play on the tour. How difficult was this emotionally for you after 20-plus years, and then you have to figure out, what the hell do I do now?
Well, it wasn't difficult. I kind of had some extenuated circumstances, and please, with all this passionate talk I'm talking about, I don't miss it at all. I don't miss the traveling. I don't miss the loneliness. I don't miss being in motels by myself and just being by myself. I mean, I got pretty depressed towards the end of my 22 career after 600 tournaments. You know, it wasn't exciting. The show was not exciting anymore. It wasn't fun to go out and be on tour. The best part was, yes, teeing it up when the tournament started, but all the other time by yourself, I mean, I just became more depressed, combined with having kidney cancer and finding out I had a golf ball-sized tumor in my left kidney in 2006. That really helped me to decide, you know, I'm not enjoying this, and I probably got kidney cancer because I'm depressed, and this sucks. And I don't want to do this anymore. If I'm not going to do it well, and I'm not going to practice, and I'm not going to work hard at it, you know, I don't deserve to do that well. And I really want to go home and spend some time with my, you know, teenage boys who I haven't really seen that much since I've been a tour player. So, I mean, it worked out perfectly, and I haven't tried to go back to tour school and get my card. I'm really trying to look forward to having this five-year break, which I always knew in my 20s and 30s that, you know, between 45 and 50 guys didn't play that well. And, you know, I didn't know I was going to end up exactly at 45 and have this time at home to do other things and to realize, you know, what I really want to do is play again, which is great. And I'm looking forward to turning 50.
And how's your health?
My health's pretty good. I'm not sure if I could handle many more Phoenix Opens coming to town. I mean, those are pretty tough on you. That's a huge 7-day party right there, but it's a lot of fun. It's great to see all these people.
The biggest party in golf.
It's easily the biggest party in golf, and it used to be Dallas was the biggest party in golf, my hometown, and now it's Phoenix, my other hometown. I'm not sure if it's me or just the weather or what, but Phoenix has surpassed Dallas as the biggest party, and it's fabulous. We raise, you know, Phoenix Thunderbirds are the best organization in the country as a sports civic organization that makes money for local charity, and they've done just a fabulous job. I think they've raised something like $70 million since the Phoenix Open started here in the early 30s. So it's really a neat organization. It's fun to be friends with all those guys and see how hard they work and put this huge, big show on, you know, the greenest show on grass, whatever it's called, and it's great stuff.
Yeah, the Thunderbirds were spectacular in the way they handled that tournament that we played in, and just to know that they're running the city at that point, they're really remarkable.
They're running the city, let me tell you.
They really are.
Yeah,
they
they're really great guys. A lot of fun.
So you gave us a little taste of life on the tour. Not the time when you're teeing it up and you're on the course, because that's the whole focus of what you want to do, but the rest of the time, life on the tour, what are the big surprises these kids coming up today have to deal with on what life on the tour is all about?
Well, you know, it's if you're smart about it, and a lot of these kids, you need some friends with you. You need companionship. You know, you need your wife. You need to have your girlfriend. Or, you know, you need to make it as comfortable and as homey as you can make it, because this is your life. You live on the road. I mean, you may have a house in Greenville, South Carolina, but you live on the road, and a lot of these guys are pretty smart. They're getting these RVs, so that's really like having a condo, you know, on wheels with you.
Yeah.
And they can have their own closet and their shoes. And I mean, I think that's a really great idea to keep it very homey. You know, a blank square or motel room after a while really gets become difficult. And now you got to break it up, stay with some friends and stay in some houses, you know, in different cities. But it's difficult. It's a big trick. You know, when do you get to the tournament? What, do you get there Monday night? You get there Tuesday? How far is the flight going to be from where you're leaving? I mean, do you have a half a day to practice that day? Is your caddy going to be there? I mean, you're going to hit balls. You need to putt. Is it raining? I mean, a lot of things come into your mind. I mean, when you're planning on when you're going to get to a golf tournament, am I in the Wednesday Pro-Am? Do I want to come in Tuesday night and spend an extra day at home? I mean, there's a lot of things. Being a West Coast guy living in Phoenix, March was always a tough month for me because I spent 4 straight weeks in Florida. And that was like the real tour started for me. I'm living in Phoenix, I could play Pebble Beach and Palm Springs and in Tucson and, you know, and get back and come back for a couple days and here and there. And, you know, the real tour really hit me when I got 4 straight weeks and 4 hotel rooms in Florida. And by that fourth week, the biggest tournament of them all, I was ready to come home every year. Never had a good Players Championship in Jacksonville. Just a beautiful, big, huge tournament, you know, and a big, huge golf course. And just never had my legs. I was ready to leave. And subsequently, my scores showed that. But, you know, there's a lot of things that go into travel planning, and I was always terrible at delegating because every time I let an agent or an agent secretary or somebody else do my travel, you know, they didn't do it right because they didn't know when I wanted to come in exactly, you know, where the transportation people could pick me up or if I needed to rent a car. That can only be done by me, and I still do everything today by myself for, you know, for my family. If anybody wants me to, I mean, I feel like a professional travel planner more than I'm a professional golfer, because it's just, you know, I want things to be seamless. I want to get off the plane, I want the car ready, I want everything, my hotel room ready to go, and not have any glitches. And if you let somebody else do your planning, there's going to be glitches, you know. So a lot of guys have their wives do it, which they just kind of follow along, which I couldn't stand. I'd have to jump in and do it, because it's what I've always done, and I'm good at it, and I know it exactly, my timing. You know, I don't want to have any downtime. I want to always be moving and keep it going and not be subject to that downtime. Like, say, going to Florida that first night, I know I never slept because I came from this time zone, so I'd always try to get the latest flight I could possibly get and get there as late as I can that first night in Miami and, you know, try to get some sleep because I knew it would be difficult. So, I mean, just things you learn as you go.
Yeah, and unlike other professional athletes, golfers don't have a home court advantage. They don't have, you know, like with baseball, you're going to be on the road for a week or two, but you're going to come home for a week or two as well.
Yeah, I mean, guys who live in Phoenix, so the Phoenix Open, you know, maybe is your home court advantage, but not really, because guys don't really play at that golf course every single day. I mean, there might have been a few Phoenix guys in that field that played there quite a bit, but most of those Phoenix guys were not members or didn't play TPC Scottsdale, don't play there every day. So you're right, there's really not ever a home court advantage. Sleeping in your home, you know, with your own bed, people say is a really nice thing to do, and you get your pillow and all that great stuff, and you get to see your dog when you wake up and have your Cheerios. But there is no home court advantage, and sometimes it can be extra pressure being at home, having more friends and family out there with expectations, and tickets and things to do. It's, you know, some guys don't handle it well, and some guys thrive on it and love the pressure.
Yeah, you know, lots of amateur players like myself, they'll go out with their buddies and they'll play for $10 over a round of golf or just for bragging rights or something. And that's always good to come home knowing that, you know, even if you used your handicap to get a couple extra strokes to beat them, that's a lot of fun, and that's why we play golf. But you've won on the PGA Tour, haven't you?
I won four times, Fred. I've won. It's kind of funny
because
I joke that I've played in 602 events in my life, and you know, I've lost 598. I'm a tremendous loser. I'm really good at this. I've only won four times, but you know, I have quite a few buddies that have played 600 and haven't won four times, and you know, and I'm considered a decent career. But two of those wins were in Florida, and two of those wins were in the desert. So it's like, you know, I know where I'm good. I'm good in Vegas and Tucson. I like the desert. That's where I'm from. I know the grasses. And for some reason, I did well at Bay Hill one year in Orlando and won the Pensacola Open in '88, my first tour win, which was really exciting. I mean, I've been on tour for 3 years, and you know, I had just a little bit of success. I really hadn't knocked on the door to win any tournaments, and it was kind of funny because I had this caddy all lined up. And he was caddying for David Graham in Australia, and he was coming over to work for me at Pensacola, but he couldn't make it. So I had to go to the parking lot, and I found a caddy that was there. His name was Levi, and he was a really, really nice, quiet black man. He was just a really, really sweet guy, you could tell, and he didn't talk at all. He was really quiet. I did my yardage myself, but he was really a nice guy, and he didn't really encourage me. He didn't say anything until the 71st hole. And I'm tied for the lead of this tournament. You know, it's not a fall series event now. It would be a ton of money. It was, you know, I won $72,000 in my first check and my first win, which was huge. But he finally spoke. He finally said something of encouragement. I had 10-footer for par, and he says, "You better make this one, pro." That's all he said. Of course, I made it and ended up two-putting in the 72nd hole to win over Ken Green. And it was really memorable. I've got some nice pictures that I still look at from Pensacola. And the only regret I have is Pensacola became defunct about a year after that I won the event, and I never got to ride in the back of the Blue Angels the jet out of Pensacola Naval Air Station, which but it's a great thing to do.
Mm. And after that first victory, you get hungrier?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You charge it even harder?
You know, you play so many tournaments. I play 30 tournaments a year, you know, and it's, you know, you don't want to go out there and minimize your weeks. You want to maximize your time on the road. And if I could have won more times, I would have played less tournaments. That's why you see, you know, Jack Nicklaus only played 17 tournaments a year because he won half of them, you know, and that's really all he could put his energy into. But most of us aren't as good as Jack and Tiger and Phil and those guys, and we have to play 30 tournaments, and you know, when you win a tournament, it's so great that you definitely get hungry to win more, and you want to win more, but you might get outside your comfort zone a little bit and not sure how you did in the first place, and you know, you just play enough of them, the numbers catch up, and you hope to catch one in there sooner or later.
And you never know which is going to be your last.
You never know, and that's my attitude was OS. I never knew. I could be playing terrible going into the tournament. I could find something on Tuesday afternoon in the practice round and find a putting key, find a downswing key, and all of a sudden I could start striping it, you know, and be ready to go on Thursday morning. Or you could show up to a tournament playing just absolutely great and play great all the way through the Wednesday Pro-Am and show up Thursday morning and not have anything, have high expectations, make a bogey or two in the first couple holes, find yourself behind the eight ball pressing and playing too aggressive, you miss the cut, and there it goes. It happens pretty fast. You know, it does take 4 hours to play a round of golf, but when things are going south, they can go south very quickly, and then you're done. I mean, you miss the cut pretty fast.
Which was the most gratifying win?
Oh, you know, I probably Las Vegas in '91 when I had to hit a career 3-iron on the 90th hole. It's a five-round golf tournament. I'm tied. I'm one back of D.A. Weibring, and I had to hit a 3-iron off of a little bit of a rough lie over water to a small green at the 18th hole at Las Vegas Country Club, and I couldn't hit it any better. A high cut kind of into the wind. The wind caught it perfectly and pushed it down on the green and held the green, and I two-putted for birdie to get into a playoff. D.A. missed his birdie try. He made par. I made birdie, and we went into a two-hole playoff, which I ended up winning. So I played a lot of holes to win, and I didn't have my best ball striking. I was hitting a huge big cut, big slice that week, and I played it all week long, and I putted fantastically and chipped great. So it really went to show me that you don't really have to have your A game. You just gotta have a game, just some kind of game, and you gotta make putts. You gotta always make putts and get up and down. That's a given every single week on tour. You have to chip and putt well, or you're not going to be successful whatsoever.
And after a victory like that, especially when you have to go into a playoff, are you emotionally drained?
Mentally drained. When you play well, I worked with Bob Rotella, the great sports psychologist out of Charlottesville, Virginia, and trying to get in there and be mentally prepared and do everything perfect with your routine and all that. I mean, I probably only did it a few times out of 600 events. I probably only was really perfect with my routine, only a couple rounds. I was so worn out afterwards for doing such a good job. And I'm just such a terrible learner that I just didn't stick with it very long. but I mean, yeah, you're extremely mentally drained after a good solid week. And I mean, I had a hard time kind of keeping it together and keeping my mental game consistent for two or three straight weeks in a row. I kind of hit it and miss. I made 350 cuts and I missed 250 cuts. So it's like either I never knew, like you said earlier, it was a hit and miss, and that's kind of the way I looked at it.
And do you have enough time to let it sink in, or are
no.
by the time it's sinking in, you're off to the next one?
No, you don't have time. And I remember Johnny Miller, saying, I wish I would have stopped and smelled the roses a little more along the way. And you really don't. When you're caught up in it, you're in it and you're just going fast, and you finish the year in October. You got 2 months at home to get ready for the next year, and you still don't have time. I always wanted 3 or 4 months at home so I could really decompress and get my game and get my body really in good shape for the next season. And by the time you kind of get off the tour during November, you're just kind of hanging out, and all of a sudden it's December, and you got a month to go till you got to be in Hawaii. You got Christmas season and New Year's. I mean, it's just the time just flies, and you just 8 weeks is just not enough time in the off season to do all the things I ever wanted to do. And of course, you're right back in the middle of it again, and you kind of do your old same habits, and it's hard to really see yourself from, you can't, and you just keep going until you fizzle out, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's so romantic, the whole notion of it, but really, it's a tough life.
It's a job. It's a job, just like your job and everybody else's job. When you're in the middle of it, you have to, it's a high pressure. That's why the money is so great now. It's every day you've got to perform, and you've got to perform from when you wake up, get your mind thinking about the right stuff and getting that first tee shot and making birdies and until, you come home in the evening where you can kind of unwind. But it's a job like any other job when you're in the middle of it, and you want to be successful and you want to bring home the bacon. And when you miss cuts and you have bad weeks, you feel like a complete loser. I mean, you feel like you just didn't maximize your opportunity. That was a waste of a week in Flint, Michigan. I hated the whole thing about it. I want to get out of here. And I mean, that happens all the time. So you really want to make cuts. You really want to be there for the whole tournament. And that helps you plan your weekend. I mean, towards the end of my career, I'd plan my weekend just in case I missed the cut. I'm going to go do this. So I always had something in the back of my mind so I wouldn't sit around the tournament site and hit balls. I remember seeing Hubert Green one time, who I adore. I thought he was just a fabulous golfer. 19 wins, U.S. Open. Really, really good player. But I saw him when he was 48 and 49 before he became a Champions Tour player. He probably played, 25 tournaments a year on the big tour, the regular tour. He missed every cut for two straight years, and he hung out on Saturday and Sunday and hit balls in the back of the range. I'm going, I'm never going to do that. He didn't have a place to go. I felt so sorry for him. He didn't have a family to go home to, or he just didn't want to, or whatever. He just stayed on the road, and that's what kills you. That's tough.
As a golfer, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
I don't know if I got the best piece of advice at all, but, you know, you got to have a game plan. I mean, you got to, if you're going to go out and play, no matter if it's a 20 handicapper or a pro, I mean, have a game plan and give yourself a chance and enjoy yourself. I mean, I think it's just so easy to get down. We talked about this earlier, is to try to be up and realize having a good attitude and trying to have fun, what you're about to do is the best chance you have to play well.
And has that been something that an old-timer told you one day while you were a young buck coming up?
I think I probably realized that when I was a junior or in college. And that was, I think my oldest brother kind of instilled that in me a little bit. He said, let's be a gentleman out there and have a good time and have fun.
Okay, so self-realization is important, but was there a moment where one of the old-timers, one of the guys that's going on the back end of his tour career when you're starting up, gave you, just said something to you that was a total aha moment for you, like, whoa, wow, thank you.
I don't really have an aha moment like that. You know, I had lunch with Nicholas once after playing with him at Memorial, and he talked about his family, and I think that was one of my aha family moments that I wanted to, not play in so many tournaments and go home and spend more time, because you never know how long you're going to have with your kids until they go to college or whatever. And I don't really have an aha bit of advice. You know, Fuzzy Zeller gave me some advice one time. I didn't think I was a slow player. And I was obviously the slowest player in the group in their minds, and I didn't really realize it until he pointed some things out that said I wasn't prepared to hit my shot when it was my turn. I didn't understand what that meant. And he goes, here, for example, as soon as you get to your ball, you got to get all your information. As soon as, I hit, you got 40 seconds and you got to hit it. I was just starting to get my yardage right when it was my turn. So Fuzzy said I wasn't prepared to hit my ball. I was just starting to prepare to get my yardage, and do all this, the pre-hit stuff. And so he really gave me some nice advice there. I've always enjoyed Fuzzy a lot.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I never forget coming off the first tee. I'm playing with him in Augusta, my first Augusta Masters. I played in seven of them. And coming off the first tee, I'm playing with Fuzzy. We played before quite a bit in other tournaments. And he's whistling "If I Only Had a Brain" from The Wizard of Oz. He was trying to calm me down.
Oh, wow.
He was trying to, because I knew him enough, and he was just wanting to show me how relaxed, you could be. He knew it was my first Masters, my first hole, million of people out there, millions of people, and, he could tell I was shaking. And he was, like, looking at me, whistling right in my eyes. I'm, like, laughing. I'm going, I didn't really get it then, but I got it now.
Wow. Awesome. And yeah. And is Augusta, is that golf mecca? Is that it?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, I think it is.
Of the courses that you've played and competed on.
Well, I mean, I played a lot of golf courses. I enjoyed the British Open and the Masters the most over the U.S. Open and the PGA by a mile. And the Masters, just driving up Magnolia Lane, seeing the clubhouse, going in the locker room and seeing some of the names in the lockers and knowing the tradition and the history of the tournament and Bobby Jones and Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and, Sam Snead and all that. It gives me goosebumps every time I go there, which I'm really fortunate. I still go there every year for, something. This year I'm doing some radio for BBC Radio in England. And I got this gig last year. I'll tell you, that's really funny, but it's really a neat gig. I sit in the media bleachers there on 12 tee box, the famous 12th hole, for 4 hours a day during the play. And it is just fabulous. The shots coming into 11, you see the 12th hole, of course, and the tee shots on 13, but it's so exciting to see the really good shots, the really bad shots, the nervous shots, the waters, the people that fly the green back in the bushes. It is really pretty entertaining, of course. And then I'm listening in my ear to BBC Five live show in London, and these guys are doing the traffic going up the M1 out of London. Then we go, back to Phil Mickelson on 12 green. It's quite exciting and a lot of fun. So I love going to Augusta every year. I think it's a must for every golf lover to go there and hang out and just be a part of it.
Mm. And when you're covering with the Golf Channel, when you're reporting for them, are you a golf professional who's reporting? Are you a reporter or are you a fan?
I think I'm all of it. I think you're supposed to be all of it. And, you know, they want you to be, as a golf professional, this is what's going through his head right now. You know, and that became kind of boring for me. I mean, I hear other guys now do that. They use that as a golf professional line, which I can't stand. I kind of want to flower everything up and make it a little bit more my own, and which is easily where I get in trouble. But, you know, they want you to not really be a fan. You're not supposed to, you know, applaud and go, wow, that's a great shot. You know, obviously it is. I just saw it on TV. You know, I have to say something that they just saw, but it's hard not to say, you know, excellent shot. That was a lot of pressure. He really pulled that one off beautifully, and which is obviously, you know, obvious because you just saw it. But it was fun. I don't do it anymore. I had a little 3-year run with the Golf Channel. Having my own show, The Approach with Alex Maselli, was a real mm-hmm. kick. It was a lot of fun. 120 shows we did in 3 years, and it kept me close to the tour. It kept me close to some players. And when you talk about the players, it's really interesting when you go back out there and you haven't seen them for months, and all of a sudden you're talking about them. They kind of want a piece of you. So it's kind of fun to go out there and go, "Hey, dude, it's just a show, man. I had to fill some content. Nothing personal here. Let it go. It's not a big deal. I need content. You're my content this week.
You're my content.
Help
this week.
Help me. You did great. Thank you.
Have the fans changed over your career? Have you seen a difference in the way the golf fans are?
Well, certainly, of course, coming after the Phoenix Open, the 16th hole, and how crazy that is.
Wow.
You know, yeah, of course they have. They used to be revered and quiet and you know, very knowledgeable about the game and how serious this whole thing is supposed to be, which I don't agree with at all. I think the golf fans of today get it a lot more. It needs to be more of a rock concert. I think it's a place to go out and have some fun, get away from your job, have some drinks with your buddies or your wife, and have a good day and relax and unwind. And I think cheering and yelling is acceptable. I don't care if it's in your downswing. And I think if guys can't handle hitting an 8-iron from 160 yards on the 16th green at Phoenix, they shouldn't be on tour anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I can do it left-handed half the time. If you can't hit an 8-iron on a green with someone yelling in your downswing, you're not a very good player. And you're not very strong mentally, and you're not prepared, and you shouldn't be there. And I can't stand guys that say, "I hate the 16th hole. It's just not fair." Well, dude, you hit a couple thousand shots a year, let's say. You really, you know, out of 4 rounds, if you make the cut, you may get through there one day early in the morning, so that means you got 3 shots out of your thousands of shots a year to deal with it. And it's fun. And deal with it in a good way and enjoy it, because they can embrace you, and you can become kind of a star, or you can be a jerk about it, and they'll boo you, which is fair. It's easy. I like it. Getting booed, it's not personal. It's just part of their fun for the day.
Right, right. Have you ever had anyone yell when you hit on that? It's in the hole!
Yeah, absolutely. And it's,
you're the man!
You might be upset for a second if you hit a poor one, but, you know, when you got thousands of people around you, you got to understand that's what's going to happen. That's just part of it, and, you know, it shouldn't bother you. It's not personally attacking you. It's just, you know, it's some.
But there are players who the fans get under their skin.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Not good.
I was following a certain group Thursday after playing with you, Fred, and this one gentleman was just terrible to the crowd. He was embarrassing. He was dropping his club. He was stopping. He was picking people out of the crowd, staring at him. Guys jingling his chains. One cart was going too. Cart was making noise down a cart path 100 yards away. He stopped, and I mean, I wanted to wring his neck. I was just embarrassed for all tour players.
Oh.
And it happens all the time. And I think these guys are making so much money, like I said earlier, and they have this sense of entitlement, and they're so self-absorbed in their own little world. They forget the big picture of people out there losing their jobs. There was an earthquake in Chile that killed hundreds. I mean, they just don't see the big picture of how lucky their life and their job can be. And I certainly I'm guilty as they are too. I mean, when you're out there in the middle of it, it's hard to really see stuff, but you really need to step back and take a look at the big picture and realize you're just an entertainer and you're in a city for a week, and do the best you can and don't be an asshole.
Yeah. It's interesting because I had a chance to interview Ernie Banks once, and this was in the late 80s, just when you were starting your golf career. And he was talking about, I asked him what he was doing now. You know, he wasn't playing baseball anymore. And he's Hall of Famer for the Cubs. Let's play two. You know, one of the great ambassadors for baseball. And he said that at that point he was studying history in the 1960s because while he was playing, he missed everything that was going on with Kent State and the Vietnam War and the Chicago Convention. You know, U.S. history was fascinating to him because he completely missed it while he was playing baseball.
And that's what happens on tour. Guys are the same way. You know, that's just what happens when you get so self-absorbed and into your own game. And, you know, you miss a lot of stuff. I wish guys would pay attention a little more and understand people are struggling out there. And, you know, some guy buying a $20 ticket to come watch you play is a big deal. You know, treat these fans with some respect, no matter what they look like or who they are. I just don't see that very much from the guys I watched the other day. It was appalling. It was appalling, and I have called the tour. I called a friend at the tour to see if I can't get a bit of an audience with Mr. Fincham just to mention that they need some kind of liaison, some kind of human behavior specialist that works with the players, for the players, you know, and tries to help in a nice way, in a tactful way, not a police effort like coming from the tour officials. So it really bothered me to watch that. It really did. Fred, I got to go.
We're having way too much fun. Let me ask you one last question, please.
Yes, sir.
Your greatest moment.
Oh, my greatest moment in golf is winning Vegas, hitting that 3-iron over the water and knowing I could do it. You know, knowing under that kind of pressure, I could pull off, you know, a really difficult shot. You know, I don't like love hitting long irons whatsoever. If it was a wedge or a 7-iron, I would say no big deal. But hitting a long iron, you know, stretching it longer than I usually would hit it, counting on the adrenaline to hook me up and get me there, and it all working, easily winning Vegas on that 90th hole was my most gratifying moment.
Awesome. Then you have to tell your strangest moment, which is, you know, it is. You got to tell.
Probably playing with you last Wednesday.
On the tour. You have a distinction on the tour that nobody else in history has.
That's not strange. I am the only guy to make a hole-in-one on a par 4 at the Phoenix Open in 2001, and it ricocheted off of Tom Byram's putter. Yes, I did hit into the group ahead of me. They were still on the green, and he was over an 8-foot putt, and my ball careened up onto the green and went through his legs, hit his putter that was lined up at the hole already, and went right in the hole. And I got a plaque right there in the 17th tee box at TPC Scottsdale. If you play there, please read about it.
You're awesome. That's awesome. Thank you so much. I'm going to let you go. I really appreciate you coming on the show. This was great.
I appreciate it. I had a lot of fun. Thank you, partner.
I had a lot of fun, too, and I hope you did as well, because that's the kind of conversation I like to have with a PGA Tour player. I don't want to hear about their score. I don't want to hear about how much money they're earning, and I don't want to hear about their exploits. But I do want to get inside their head. So I hope you enjoyed that. I'm really excited to introduce you to a new Golf Smarter partner, Golf Ahoy at GolfAhoyWest.com. If you ever travel to play golf, especially if you're planning international travel but are concerned about cost, you have to consider taking an all-inclusive cruise through GolfAhoyWest.com. I'll be telling you more about their services and our future plans for a Golf Smarter adventure in the coming episodes. But the most important piece of business they want to share with you is the 2010 Ryder Cup. Whether you're rooting for the United States or Europe, whether you live in the United States or Europe doesn't matter, and whether you're rooting for either one doesn't matter, but this year's Ryder Cup will be 4 days of very intense competition. Because at last year's President's Cup in San Francisco, there seemed to be a little bad blood boiling under the surface, and that will just fuel the intensity of this year's Ryder Cup being played at Celtic Manor in Wales between September 28th and October 4th, 2010. Mark those dates down, September 28th to October 4th. I want you to call my friend Frank Rogers at 877-415-5442, extension 7819. All this information is going to be in our show notes. 877-415-5442, extension 7819. It's to Frank Rogers, and book this incredible golf adventure. This is a complete package with accommodations on board a privately chartered ship called Le Diamant. Whether you're setting this up for a corporate event or taking a vacation, you will find Le Diamant to be an ideal combination of comfort and convenience. She'll be berthed in a specially designated area of Newport Docks, only 7 miles from Celtic Manor, the golf course where they're playing the Ryder Cup. And since GolfAhoyWest.com will be taking care of all of your arrangements, tickets to each day's matches, shuttle service to and from Celtic Manor, and breakfast, lunch, and dinner on board are all included in this price. I really want you to check out this package. These are really good folks, and we're really pleased that they understand who Golf Smarter listeners are. For more information on the Ryder Cup, click on their banner ad at golfsmarter.com. To book the trip, call Frank Rogers, 877-415-5442, extension 7819. For all the details, check out the show notes or get information on our blog posting of today's show. We conclude with what could be our last show closing quote. I recently received an email from a friend that had a long list of sentiments on why he loves golf. So I thought, wow, that's actually a great idea. Let's make a little bit of a change here. Starting next week, I'm going to end the show with different reasons why we love golf. And I would love for you to send me yours. But today, we end with an amusing quote. My favorite shots are the practice swing and the conceited putt. The rest can never be mastered. Next week, our old friend Jamie Zimron, the golf sensei, returns to introduce us to her new program, Bliss Fitness. If you have any suggestions, questions, comments, or reasons why you love golf, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.